o'clock Central. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah here in the Mobile Kintech studio at Rogers Arena. Preparations ongoing for the Florida Panthers to come into Rogers Arena, where the Canucks are sub-500 this year, despite being on a 100-point pace through the first third of the season. Let's bring in our next guest. He is Canucks and Sportsnet analyst Landon Ferraro, joins us every Thursday here on the show. Thanks for this, Landon. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing pretty well, getting ready for the return of JT Miller to the lineup. He's been out for a while. We heard he's been skating. Rick Tocchet, though, mentioning, you know, he's got to manage JT a little bit tonight. What do you expect to see from the Canucks' emotional leader coming back into the lineup tonight?
I imagine that he gets, you know, some... They hold him a little bit at the beginning, and then he's going to get himself moving in the game and quickly want a lot more, and he'll end up kind of getting back to that regular shift real quick, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, I think as far as, you know, what he can provide for the team, we're all kind of really curious to see what he can bring, but with the Canucks being kind of devoid of depth on the blue line, up the blue line, especially with Filip Hronek out, how much do you think having... Miller and his speed can help their transition game?
I think it can be huge. And before we get to the transition game, just having another big, aggressive body down low in the D zone and net front battles and all of that, I think will be a huge boost and can help out the D a bit. But, you know, the way that he can turn up ice and get a play moving, using, like, he's really good at using and getting his line mates involved as well, moving up the ice. Like, just adding that piece back into the middle gives the team so much more depth, but it also just gives them that, you know, that real aggressiveness. And, you know, like you guys said, like, he is the emotional leader on this team, and, like, he's the type of guy that can, you know, make sure the guys are ready at the beginning of a game. If they're not, like, he's going to let them know, and that's just who he is. That's not him putting on an act. It's just he wants to win, and he will do anything for it. And, like, bringing that back in, just it gives the team a bit more direction up front, I feel.
Yeah, and the depth of the lineup just looks so much stronger with Miller back, because not only – you know, does Miller come back into the lineup? Now you've got your duo of Miller and Besser, so you can put them on a line. You have Pettersson and DeBrusque, who have started to gain chemistry, and have them on their own line. Bring Sherwood back with them. Keep Suter and Garland, that thing going together. So now you've got your three legitimate forward lines back into the fold, and you know, you become a harder team to match up against, and you've got a lot more confidence putting out different looks over the boards if you're Rick Tocchet tonight.
Yeah, but, and you're 100% right, but also, like, that pushes Bluger back into the fourth line center role.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ratu and Sasson played his one game there. Like, they did a totally fine job, and for especially for young guys coming up, like, they've handled it well and given the Canucks some good minutes. But as soon as you drop Bluger back into that line, it really gives you a fourth line that Tocchet will feel way more at ease putting over the boards, and not just in certain situations. Like, again, like, it just gives, it makes the lineup look like it was designed to be. And now you don't have to worry as much if, you know, one line gets caught out and there's an icing. Like, it's not a hold your breath moment. You know, it's a lot more steady throughout.
Yeah, and as far as, you know, what we've seen from some individual players, it's, you know, like Reach mentioned, it's funny how much a difference one player can make. And, you know, I think the coach would refer to him as a puzzle guy, because you kind of put the puzzle in place when he's back in the lineup. And I think giving a guy like Hoglander a shot right away in the top six alongside Miller and Besser, I think that's the right way to go, to throw that kid a bone as well.
Oh, for sure. And especially, like, the timing worked out as well. You know, Hoglander, I felt, had, you know, one of his better games he's had in, you know, a while now. Last game, he was, he was back really buzzing around, but didn't get himself in trouble where he was having to reach and, you know, where he's taking ozone penalties quite a bit. And, you know, like, he's coming off, you know, a good feeling. So, like, putting him right with those two, and again, like, it's a simplified job for him. Like, it's not like he's got to become more than he is. Like, he can just use his energy, use his puck hounding that he's so good at, and just get it back to those, to Miller and Besser, and get himself to the net. Like, it just simplifies his game as well.
Landon Ferraro, our guest here on Canucks Central, and this lineup has needed more help through the forward group, needed that depth back, but you're not getting Filip Hronek back just yet, and we know that the back end has been a bit of an issue here. We see the numbers and what it looks like with Hughes on the ice compared to when Hughes isn't on the ice. Is there a way that Miller helps this team break the puck out of their own end? Because, you know, he does and has that ability to drop deep and help the breakout as well. And I think having that extra player that can really transition the puck through the neutral zone is going to help this team, in theory, break out a little bit better than they've been able to lately.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I'd say that, again, like, a lot of it has to do with, well, one, JT's a very smart hockey player, and he understands that being, you know, 5 or 10 feet deeper in the D zone might actually make the exit a lot easier. Like, he understands coming back to go get his offense. Like, there is a difference in that. But I think the biggest thing is just that, like, he's a bigger, heavy, strong player that when he's in the D zone, you know, like, I always had, you know, in Grand Rapids, we had this, you know, a couple big D, and their joke to me was, man, my job's a lot harder when, because I was still playing center at that time, like, man, my job's a lot harder when you're on the ice, because I got to go take care of your guy too, because you can't hold him into the corner. Like, just little things like that, like, the defense know it's him going back for the puck, or he's going into the corner to get it. Like, I don't have to worry as much with him in there. Like, he's going to make the right read. He's going to be hard on it. And now it's just about getting open and being an outlet for him instead of having to rush in and now kind of be two-on-one on a player just to get the puck out.
Yeah, and I think if you get him going, and hopefully he does, and one thing we saw the other night was Dakota Joshua have his best game and was able to finally get that goal. Do we get a lot closer here to maybe seeing three lines that can really dictate a little bit if they get JT going and Dakota's looking better?
I think so, and I think that, you know, like, Besser has done a pretty good job, of course, since Miller's been out, up on Pettersson and DeBrusk line, but, like, that's not his spot either, right? Like, him and Miller are so good together. Like, it's hard when, you know, Pettersson loves to make plays and feed the, you know, kind of the big shooters, but, like, it's hard when you got two shooters on one line in DeBrusk and Besser. Like, now you have two workers in Sherwood and Hoglander. You have the playmakers and you have the trigger guys in DeBrusk and Besser on separate lines. Like, you've now spread that out. It goes, and then it obviously pushes into Suter, Garland, and Joshua, who have been a good line in the past. Suter has really elevated his game this year. Garland has, you know, has been Garland, and we've talked, you know, a ton about him. But like you said, like, Joshua, not only did he score last game, but he made some plays, especially on the forecheck and gaining zone entry, where, like, he used his size, he used his smarts, but, like, you know, the play after his goal, he's coming over the blue line, it's kind of a bobbled puck, and he pushes past the back checker, he pushes past the D and kind of ties him up, and I think it might have been Suter that came through and grabbed it, and they got a chance out of it. Like, that's him bullying guys, and that's what everyone is used to seeing out of Joshua, and it's starting to come. You can see it for sure.
On defense, you know, Hughes is continuing to do his thing, but, you know, he's playing 29 minutes. It's a lot on his shoulders. What can they do away from Hughes to simplify the game, be a little bit more cleaner in their breakouts? Is it a team effort? How can they clean up some of those things that have really hurt them these last few games?
Like, it might sound a bit crazy, but, like, to me, I think how they can improve is demanding plays get made and not allowing just, you know, not every time, but it definitely is like a quick default to, I don't see anything off my first look, I'm just throwing it high off the glass or doing that high flip into the neutral zone. Like, if they can start just making that first play, can you make the first 5 to 10 foot pass, get it out of your hands, but it just get it into the forward's hands and let them start taking it up with possession. Like, that alone will help clean up the D zone a bit, and some of that will be getting back to pucks faster when they're dumped in, not doing as many shoulder checks to really see and then just smacking it around the boards. Like, get back there, get your feet turned around the puck and look up ice and make that first play. Like, a team that's connected coming out of the D zone is, you know, of course, much faster than just throwing it off the glass and having to chase it down again.
Yeah, and, you know, being able to connect play was something that was so difficult for them the other night here at Rogers Arena against the Blues, and hopefully we see them do a lot better with that. And, you know, obviously the decision to keep Brännström out of the lineup has a lot of fans, upset because they like the way Brännström's played. I can understand why the coach is making that decision, especially wanting to have a lefty-righty combination on that third pair. But as far as the way Brännström's played the last few games, we know he's brought a lot, but he's also struggled in his own zone defensively. Do you understand the reasoning behind going with Friedman and Forbert as opposed to having Brännström on his offside tonight?
I mean, I understand it for sure in the sense of, you know, Friedman had a pretty good game. He, you know, was here basically all last year and just, you know, he didn't play a ton. He's earned the right to play. And I thought he did all right the other night. And then you have Forbert coming back in, and like, I think that's a big piece too, that, you know, I'll include myself in that, of like, you kind of forgot that he was here. Like, he had, you know, his leave, obviously when his father passed away, but then he got hurt right away when he came back, and like, he just hasn't been in the lineup and hasn't been around the team. Like, he alone, not that he's going to be the savior on defense and he's a crazy, you know, good puck moving defenseman, but he's a very steady and able defenseman that can eat some good minutes, play in the PK, and kind of open up that a bit. At the beginning of the season that he was playing was like a lot of the other defense that just, it wasn't, his foot speed wasn't there, his decision-making wasn't quite up to pace, but that was a lot of guys at the beginning of the year. If they can get him back in feeling comfortable and get his game to where, you know, it was when they signed him, which, you know, it'll get there. Maybe not tonight as his first game back in, but, he's another guy that can add some stability to that back end.
So Florida's in town, defending Stanley Cup champs. They won 6-7. Sam Reinhart is second in the league in goals scored with 19 already, so he's following up his big 57-goal year last year. I mean, we know that there's talent on this team, but what about their identity makes them so consistent?
Whether they're feeling good or not, like they have, you know, they're feeling their team play or not that night, the way that they play really doesn't change. They're aggressive on the forecheck. They like to scrum it up a bit. They make the night extremely hard for whatever team they're playing. And it's funny because generally when you have all those things, you're kind of more of a meat and potato type team, yet like they're filled with big skill. And, you know, I mean that as in, like, yeah, they have a ton of skill, but like, they're big. Tkachuk and Barkov, you know, even Bennett, Bennett's, you know, a tank as well, but like with Reinhart, like all those players are not afraid to go to the hard areas of the ice, the front of the net. They'll eat cross checks and whatever else you want to give out, but they're going to find that open puck. So net front is like a massive part of the game tonight.
Yeah, and I think as far as what we've seen from the Canucks goaltending-wise this season, it's been absolutely massive with the way Kevin Lankinen has played and the way Thatcher Demko's played. And big picture-wise, as this team is trying to figure out how to play in front without Filip Hronek and what to do on the blue line and working guys like JT Miller back into shape, how big can it be to have two goalies that can play at a high level as you work through these things the next few weeks to months?
Well, I mean, it's always a good thing if you have two goalies that you can count on. you know, especially Demko as he starts working back into it and getting himself to what he normally is. You know, because even his first game, like, there was a couple bobbles off his glove that just, you know, that's just not him. And obviously it takes, you know, it takes a player a couple games to really get back into it. I couldn't even imagine as a goalie, but, you know, he looked very calm in net still. He looked, the thing that I liked was just how aggressive and strong his pushes laterally side to side. You know, I'd imagine that, you know, you're pushing off the knee that that he hurt, and you're, you know, you're kind of worried about jamming it into that other post, but like none of that looked like it was in his head. He was confident in what his body could hold, and, you know, as a team is still trying to figure out their identity, figure out players coming back, like, you need the goalies to be able to bail you out from time to time, and for the Canucks, it's been a little more often than they would have liked through you know, through the first 20 or so games there. But, you know, like, knowing that if you mess up, there's someone back there that can make the save, like, that is a huge, huge mental release for the team, for sure.
I guess Tockett's deflection of questions about Pedersen has worked, because we haven't asked you about Petey's game just yet.
How about that? Eh?
it was something, but you know what? He didn't get a question about Pedersen today. So
I just looked. I made it over 17 minutes. Yeah, that's got to be a record.
That's got to be a record. But he had the goal and the assist the other night. I mean, it's hard to be critical when a guy goes 1-1. Right, but I haven't loved his overall game. Even just that whole line with Pedersen, DeBrusque, and Besser, you know, you put all three of those guys together, you're hoping that they're able to drive play a little bit, and they've actually struggled. They were giving up quite a few goals against, even at 5-on-5. But, you know, throw all that aside, at the end of the day, Pedersen, you know, we were asking for a bottom line in October, and, you know, he's been giving the team a lot of production lately. I think it's 23 points now in the last 15 games. So while his whole game, I still don't think is fully come together, you know, he's at least giving you a lot right now, and he's allowing you to collect some points.
Yeah, and again, I think a bit of it is Miller coming back will open up, you know, Petey playing against lower lines. So that'll make it a little bit easier. But like I was saying before, I really do think that, you know, having Besser on that DeBrusque and Pedersen line, it was a good hold while JT was out, but, like, it's just not the right makeup of a line. Like, you need someone to go get the puck, and DeBrusque will do it, Pedersen will do it, but if you have, you know, kind of that more wrecking ball style in a Sherwood or again, like, even Hoglander, who you chip the puck in and you don't have to worry about who's going to get it. Like, putting Petey into the corner every single time, like, he's having to use so much more energy just to get the puck back.
Yeah.
That by the time that he can go to make plays, like, he's already been in, you know, call it 10 seconds in his own end, and then another 15 seconds to get up the ice and get the puck back, like, you're at 25 all of a sudden. Like, you know, you've gone half your shift before you even get the puck back, and now you can, you know, like, guys know, even if it's on the other side, like, you know, I knew I was a speed guy, and not that I could go hold pucks, but I could get to it first and then throw it around either side to get it into the better guy's hands. And, you know, those guys know that you're going to go get it. Now they can worry about the next part. Like, it just frees up Pedersen to do more on the offensive side instead of just having to, you know, go in and battle it out every shift.
Well, it just shows that, to your point, you really need to have somebody that can be a true F1 on every line, and having a guy that can be a digger and get the puck to your skill guys, right?
Yeah, like, and as much as, you know, as the way we talk about it and fans talk about it, like, it's kind of like just that extra guy that's over on the other wing that goes and runs around and clears it up. But, like, man, that takes a lot of skill. It takes a lot of hockey IQ to not just run around and be fast around the ice, but do it with a purpose. And not only that, but as you're going in on F1, and Sherwood does a great job of this, actually, of, like, you know he's going to finish on the D-man on the forecheck there, but he doesn't go in straight at him. And now the puck can go to the left or right, and the, your four checkers behind you have to kind of wait that extra second to see which way it's going to pop. Like, he does a good job with his stick of guiding it one way or the other, cutting off the back of the net so they know it'll be turned back up. Like, all those little things shave time off the defensive side for the defensive player trying to make that play. All of a sudden, half the ice gets cut off, everything starts to shrink, and that's all because F1 gets in the right position and forces the puck in one direction. It makes everything else easier for everyone.
Landon, thanks for this. We'll be seeing you on the broadcast tonight.
All right. We'll see you in a bit, Sat.
You got it, buddy.
Hey, give him back some airtime, okay? Our listeners, they want more Sat sometimes.
Yeah, well, Sat can't have hair and airtime, okay? You can't have both.
Only a little bit of each. That's it. We'll take it.
Thanks, Landon.
Yep, see you guys.
There he is, Landon Ferraro, Sportsnet and Canucks analyst, joins us every Thursday here on Canucks Central. This hour of Canucks Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. And if you have a hockey player to buy for on your Christmas list, you need to check out the Hockey Shop in Langley. Their expert staff have been busy getting their stick racks ready for gift-giving season, and they've got the best selection of Bauer sticks for you to put under the tree. Like Bauer's newest stick, that's the ultimate gift for any hockey player, the Bauer Twitch. At the top of every kid's wish list is the Bauer Mystery Mini Stick, and the Hockey Shop has them in stock now, too. The Hockey Shop in Langley or online at thehockeyshop.com. More on the Canucks and Panthers. You'll hear from Rick Tocchet. You'll hear from JT Miller next on Canucks Central.
Catch up on what happened in Vancouver sports with Halford and Brough in the morning. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back in on Canucks Central, we're in the Mobile Kintec studio here at Rogers Arena. The Canucks and Florida Panthers set for a battle. Panthers 18-9-2 on the season, and the Vancouver Canucks 14-8-5. Florida's won six of their last seven, including each of their last three. But the Canucks are getting JT Miller back into the lineup tonight, so an extra boost after getting Thatcher Demko back the other night. Our next guest, Jonathan Davis, host of Ice Cap on Sirius XM. Thanks for this, Jonathan. The Panthers haven't really missed a beat. No Stanley Cup hangover for them, hey?
No, it's surprising. I mean, like, you would have thought at some point, aren't they going to be just tired? I mean, you're playing that many games over 2 years. You'd think you'd be worn down at some point, but you know, maybe it's just living in South Florida. Look, I'm here in Southern California. It definitely changes your mindset when it's 72 and sunny those days.
Yeah, I can imagine that. And, I mean, maybe that just keeps the good vibes going. But it just seems like every move they make, especially on the back end, ends up working out for them. Last year, they brought in Oliver Ekman-Larsson on a cheap deal, and he played so well, won a Stanley Cup, got a nice contract from the Toronto Maple Leafs, and it seems like they haven't really missed a beat defensively, adding a guy like Nate Schmidt. So when you look at how they're able to kind of patch things over a year to year, it's pretty remarkable having lost guys like Oliver Ekman-Larsson, but even more notably, a guy like Brandon Montour.
Yeah, no, there's no question. But, I mean, at the beginning, you know, I'd say, what, first 6 weeks of the season, it was a team that was scuffling. I mean, you know, I think that there was, you know, the narrative early on, though, was that, you know, to take a look at all the guys that they had lost from this lineup. I mean, you mentioned some of them, but, you know, you had some of the sandpaper guys like a Ryan Lomberg that, you know, that they missed. But, you know, I think what's happened is that when you bring in that many new players, it takes time, and we're seeing the same thing in Vegas where it's been a big roster turnover for the Golden Knights. So, you know, both these teams, I'm not surprised, slow starts in some ways, but we're starting to see, you know, the maturity of this group and the solid foundation that both the, you know, that this Florida team has, and they're playing some really good hockey.
Curious how you look at the Vancouver Canucks. There's been some frustration in the market here, specifically at, you know, the team not performing up to expectations. As you know, the results have been fine, but, you know, the fan base is kind of like, yeah, you guys have been scraping by, but I don't know if we believe in this thing as a cup contender, that this team is going to take a jump from where it was a year ago. They've had a lot of injuries, a lot of absences, a lot of stories that have gone through this first third of the season. What have you viewed of the Vancouver Canucks?
Well, it's not just injuries, but it's who's out of the lineup. I mean, You know, we're you're talking Besser and Miller and Thatcher Demko. I mean, you know, look, any team that's going to miss the types of players that the Canucks have missed, I mean, I think Rick Tocchet's done a really good job at you know, kind of putting a Band-Aid on this roster and making it work. And you know, and the fact that they're in the top three, you know, in the division, I wouldn't be too concerned. I'd be more scared if I'm the rest of the Pacific once this team gets healthy. And it's, you know, it started with the return to Demko and Miller coming back tonight. So I think the Canucks are in a really good spot.
Well, yeah, because we look at the Pacific Division. There's third by point percentage so far. Edmonton's very close to them. They have one more point and one more game played. But they're not that far off a team like the LA Kings and even the Vegas Golden Knights. So the fact that they've been able to get through this and still be within reach of the division title, I think, is positive. And as far as getting a guy like JT Miller back, like, what's your view of JT from the outside? Because we know that in this market, he's beloved, of course. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation after he took the leave away from the team and people brought him up in trade rumors. But since that's been really quieted down. And the coach referred to JT as one of the best players in the league today when talking about him coming back. What's your view of JT and the impact he can make?
Well, it's a guy that you win with. I mean, you know, saw it in the playoffs last year. You know, there's the guy both on and off the ice that, you know, he answers the questions. He deals with everything. He's willing to put the team on his back. So for me, you can't have enough. Well, maybe you can't have too many JT Mo's, because I'm sure that, you know, it's kind of like guys like Bieksa and Kessler. They can grate on you after a while. But, hey, I'll take JT Miller 24-7. You win with him, not just the type of player that gets you through the regular season, but a guy that can take you on a run in the playoffs.
Yeah, Canucks are happy to have him back and have something close to the full semblance of their lineup here. Now, the Pacific Division, I mean, we've seen Edmonton get hot. The Kings, where you are, they've been on fuego six in a row now. They've made it. Adrian Kempe is really finding his form. What have you seen with this Kings team that's found that's got them as hot as they are?
You know, they're kind of a perplexing team in a lot of respects, guys, because they play great defense. There's no questions. What, 9 in the last 10 games, it's 2 goals or less. They've had some impressive wins. They've beaten Minnesota. They've beaten Dallas. They've beaten Winnipeg. But there's nothing like you watch this team here. They just don't dominate anybody. And but they grind games out. Like, they are 6-0-1 this year when they score exactly 3 goals. They're 15-0-2 when they score 3 or more. So the key is, what we've seen is that you've got to limit them to 2 goals right now, because they'll just grind you down. But there's nothing. Look, they're Andre Kopitar is having another outstanding year. Mm-hmm. But it'd be really nice, I think, if somebody else could lead this team in scoring. I mean, you're still asking your 37-year-old captain to do a lot of heavy lifting. It's working. They're getting good goaltending. I mean, Big Save Dave has been really good. He's playing well tonight. What's interesting with Riddick, though, is his splits home and road are just, they're night and day. He's got a microscopic goals against average, I think, at home of like 1.5, but it's like 3.5 on the road. He's played four road games. He's given up 7, 6, 4, and 3. All 11 home games he's given up 2 or less.
Obviously, getting Drew Doughty back is going to be massive and a huge boost for the team. And the fact that, you know, they picked up as many points as they have without him shows you how well the defense has fared. Has the defense really answered some big, hard questions with how they played without Drew Doughty so far this season?
They've answered questions. I think the guy that's really flourished with the absence of Doughty is Drew's partner in Mikey Anderson, because the prevailing thought has been that Mikey Anderson has been a really good defenseman, large in part to being paired with Doughty and not having to be the guy. But since Drew has been out, he's been the guy. He's carried the pair, whether it's, you know, no matter who he's playing with. You know, this is a guy that, you know, I think will wear, you know, he will be a cat, you know, he'll wear a letter once Drew, you know, even when Drew leaves. You know, he's been wearing the letter in Drew's absence. But yeah, I'm really impressed with Mikey Anderson. And it's interesting, the Kings have been going to, Jim Hiller is one coach that he doesn't care what the injury status is. He goes 11-7. I've never seen a coach play more 11-7 than Jim Hiller. And we've been seeing that for about the last 3 weeks.
It's interesting. Rick Tocchet is anti 11-7. He did it once this year. He's like, yeah, I'm not doing this again. So, it's
well, you know, I think the Kings really hate their forwards. I'll be perfectly honest with you. They do. They look, they did the same thing with Arthur Kaliev last year. It's a little different with what they're doing with Akil Thomas. But there's just, I don't know. There's never really been a trust with. This is what I'm saying, and this kind of leads into what I was saying earlier with the fact that, like, they haven't developed a forward for quite some time. I mean, not an elite. Look, you've got Kempe, who, you know, elite goal scorer, you know, kind of like in the Kyle Connor, Nikolaj Ehlers territory, but they just don't have that you know, that elite player.
And what do you think of Quinton Byfield? I mean, he scored 20 goals last year, and there's a lot of this big expectation that he finally showed what he's capable of after being the second overall pick back in 2020. And the hope was this year he's going to take another step. The fact that it's been so hard for him to generate offensively, what do you think that's attributed to?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a good thing he's playing in L.A. and he's not playing in Vancouver, because he'd be absolutely vilified for what's going on. I think it's like, what, 4 or 5 goals in the last 50-plus games. You know, I think the problem with Byfield is that they asked him to be, you know, that number one left winger playing with Kopitar and Kempe, and he did all the dirty work for those two guys, and he did a good job. Now he's been put back to his position of center. All summer long, he's going to be our third-line center, and it lasted, what, 4 or 5 games, and they moved him back to the wing, and now they've moved him back to center. So after what, he's been in the league for 4 years, he's just learning how to play center. And we're seeing a real learning curve with all the responsibilities that go with the position. Like, I just think that it's taking him time to adapt after being, you know, the guy that all he was doing for two seasons, his last two seasons in Los Angeles, was just chasing down pucks. And he did a really good job at it. But now he's got to do a lot more. And, you know, look, I've had talks with I remember talking to Sam Cosentino before the draft, and so this is not revisionist history. They made a mistake. Like, there's no question in my mind. The guy they should have taken is playing in Ottawa. And that's, you know, regardless of what's going on with Byfield right now, you know, they made a mistake.
Yeah, Tim Stützle is looking like a pretty good player. Not that Byfield won't be, but he's just
different
kind of caliber right now.
But even look, think about when Byfield was playing for Canada, even at the Worlds, like, his best games were against, like, German, you know, well, Latvia. I mean, it wasn't in the gold medal games. I mean, he was never the guy. And, you know, he was a really big kid, still is a big kid playing, you know, when he was playing in juniors, but now he's playing against men. And I think it's just been an adjustment playing, you know, a very hard position at center in the NHL.
So what's going on with Vladislav Gavrikov? I can't imagine that the Kings have much interest in trading him, even though he's currently unsigned beyond this year. Do they work out a deal before the trade deadline? What do you see happening here with Gavrikov?
I don't think they can afford not to sign him. They just don't have a replacement. I mean, so I think he's back. Mm-hmm. You know, here's you know, one of the problems that you have in Los Angeles is that, you know, Rob Blake, as well as on an expiring contract.
Yeah.
We don't know who's going to be the GM in Los Angeles next year. So when it comes to, you know, moves, whether it's Gavrikov or whatever trades at the deadline, like, I don't know who, you know, we just don't know what's going on right now and who's, you know, who's going to pull that trigger. Will Rob get his extension? He may not get it until the end of the year.
Yeah, that'll be fascinating to watch what happens with the front office, and a lot of it dependent, I would imagine, on how they do this season and into the playoffs. I did want to ask you also about the other team in SoCal, the Anaheim Ducks, and a player who a few years ago really captured the imagination of NHL fans and was on the EA Sports cover of the NHL game, and that's Trevor Zegras. And obviously, it hasn't gone well for him the last couple of years. He doesn't look happy when he's on the ice, and now he's suffered another injury, a knee injury he had surgery on, and by all accounts, it wasn't as bad as it could have been. But what do you make of what's happened with Trevor Zegras and what his standing is, not only with the Anaheim Ducks, but also the league?
Well, I mean, look, it's an unfortunate injury that he's just gone through. And I thought in many respects, guys, there was progress that was being made with Zegras over the, you know, just prior to the injury. I think that there's been more of a commitment to playing at both ends of the ice. You know, the early results hadn't been there, but we've seen Zegras playing in situations this year that he hasn't played in before. And I go back, like, even like you go back to the first game of the year where it was a one-goal game and the Ducks are defending and they've got the, you know, San Jose's got the goalie pulled and Zegras is out on the ice. And I asked him, you know, how did that happen? And he said, well, look, he went to Cronin in the offseason and said he was going to make a commitment to change his game. So, you know, we'll see what happens with this injury. We'll see what they end up doing. I mean, there's talent there. I think that they need guys that can score. We'll see if his game continues to be able to round itself out. It is a mystery because he has been passed by the likes of Leo Carlson and Troy Terry. But look, they've got some other decisions to make with guys like Frank Petrano and Dylan Strome. You know, maybe Zegras does stay.
Final one, and it's on Jack Eichel, who is sixth in the league in scoring right now. You know, you'd ask people about Jack Eichel, like, yeah, he's great. And do you know Jack Eichel's never scored more than 70 points in a season with the Vegas Golden Knights? And people would probably look at you cross-eyed and be like, what are you talking about? He's one of the better scorers in the league. It's like, he's never done that. And now he is. He's putting that together. It feels like this could be a Jack Eichel contends for the Hart Trophy kind of season so far.
Yeah, well, I think he has definitely has his name in there. I mean, the guy in Minnesota.
Yeah, right, he's pretty now, good too.
Yeah. he's pretty good, but I look at this Vegas roster, and to me, it's the deepest it's ever been. I mean, I think they're the best team in the division, and Eichel has flourished playing with Barbashev and Stone when he's healthy. But yeah, we have seen an MVP season from Jack. It's great to watch. I mean, he's a special player, but he does it a lot differently. You know, he's not Connor. He doesn't have the style of Connor. He's not Austin. You know, it's different, but man, at the end of the day, you know, you look at the score sheet and it's 2 points here. It's one here. It's three there. It's a little quieter, for sure, but we are seeing an MVP type season from Jack Eichel.
Hey, Jonathan, really appreciate the time. Thanks so much for this today.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy. And, my timeline's been just, man, you guys are really PO-ing everybody.
Yeah, pretty much. That's the way it goes with the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, more or less.
Thanks for this,
Good
Jonathan.
Good work. Fine work, guys.
Yeah, there he is, Jonathan Davis, host of Ice Cap on Sirius XM, and joins us regularly here on Sportsnet 650. It's interesting with Vegas. You know, Eichel's never put up more than 70 points in a season with Vegas. He topped out his career at 82 points. You know, for a guy that's making $10 million, it's not exactly the sort of point production you would expect. But I think he's built himself into... For as much as other people want to say Mitch Marner is the best two-way player in the league, I don't think Jack Eichel gets nearly enough love for how good of a two-way player he is, and now he's got the point production to go with it.
Yeah, I still think Barkov's a better two-way player than Marner.
Yeah.
And I think Marner's good. I mean, I'm not trying to crap on Marner, but, like, yeah, I think Barkov, and he's proven it in the playoffs, too. And he can play center. He's got size. And not to say that Marner's not effective defensively, but in the postseason, Marner's had some struggles. He's not able to separate and make the impact Barkov is able to make, right? And I think Eichel can do similar things. And when they won the Stanley Cup, guess who was the best two-way player in the playoffs? It was Jack Eichel, mm-hmm. right? 6'2" center, has some size as well. I mean, can play a physical brand of hockey when it's required. He's an incredible player. And, you know, to Jonathan's point about the depth, I still think forward depth, they could still use another player. But, like, Pavel Dorofeyev has scored 12 goals this year.
Yep.
Like, he's on pace to score 30-odd-some goals. If he actually does that, well, he replaces Marchessault.
Yep.
And if you have that internal replacement, you know, that just kind of puts you in the same spot you were last year as far as your forwards. And if you get one more guy with that blue line, like, that, this team is very formidable.
Well, when everybody else is looking for a defenseman, right?
Yeah.
Like, Florida needs a defenseman. Canucks need a defenseman. Edmonton needs a defenseman. Guess what Vegas doesn't need?
Defenseman.
They don't need to spend their assets on potentially a defenseman.
Do they have the best 1-6 in the league?
I think so.
Right? Like, you can say, you know, because of Makar, Taves, and their second pair, too.
I don't think Colorado's there. Not depth-wise.
Well, I think that losing Byram really took that away from them, right? And their second pair is still decent. Their third pair with Shillington, they've struggled, you know, defensively, but you can maybe talk yourself into some stuff there
maybe
with them.
Maybe Carolina?
Carolina. But yeah, you can mention Carolina kind of in that breath, right? But I'm not even sure that they're there necessarily.
Yeah.
I think the Golden Knights are pretty much in their own tier as far as defense goes.
It's going to be interesting. And a team that's going to be, as we mentioned off the top, and a lot of people didn't agree with us having them as a team that could win the Pacific Division when we did our predictions at the start of the year. But here they are and looking pretty good right now. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. We're going to get more into the pregame here with the Canucks and Florida Panthers. It's disappointing to hear that, LA is probably going to keep Vladislav Gavrikov, but that's something we have expected because he's too good a player for the LA Kings to let go.
Yeah, and I think if you're looking at a defenseman in SoCal who might get traded to be on the lookout for, is probably Cam Fowler mm-hmm. with the Anaheim Ducks. And I think the big question with him just comes down to what is the ask and the fact that he has one more year on his contract the next season at 6.5. At 6.5, the number is a bit onerous. If they're willing to retain on Cam Fowler, he becomes a really interesting player, right? They wanted to reel his minutes back, and they have, but they still have him as being the high minute man because they don't have guys that can play better than he can, despite having some young players and promising players on the back end. There's been a big reliance on Cam Fowler. He's a guy that could really be interesting on the trade market, especially if Anaheim retains on him.
Anaheim does not have any retention spots already used, so, you know, if they really are motivated to move guys like Fowler and John Gibson, the only way to do that is to probably retain a little bit and make those transactions a little bit easier for contending teams to take on. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. We'll get more into the pregame show. JT Miller is back. Canucks and Florida Panthers pregame is next on Sportsnet 650.